From WXXI News, I'm Megan Mack, and this is Connections. Our connection this hour was made on a summertime day in Newport, Rhode Island, where attendees at the Newport Folk Festival and people around the world were taken by surprise. Joni Mitchell, folk legend Joni Mitchell, took to the stage and performed her first full set in more than 20 years. Wearing sunglasses and a blue beret with her blonde hair tied into pigtails, Mitchell shared stories and sang hits like Big Yellow Taxi, Blue, and brought tears to audience members' eyes with Both Sides Now. Mitchell was found unconscious in her home in 2015 after suffering from a brain aneurysm. She told media outlets that it left her unable to walk and talk. Since then, she's worked hard on her rehabilitation while staying mostly out of the public eye. She retaught herself how to play guitar, and she's been hosting performances called Joni Jams in her living room for the past few years. Her appearance at the Newport Festival was organized by Brandi Carlile, who wrote on Twitter after the show, quote, "After all she's been through, she returned to the Newport Folk Fest stage after 53 years, and I will never forget sitting next to her while she stopped this old world for a while. I can't even watch it without the tears from coming back," end quote. Mitchell told CBS that she was feeling the love. This hour, we discuss Mitchell's music and career and the impact that folk music can have. We also talk about what it does feel like to stop the world for a while, the power that that performance had. And I'll tell you why you're hearing my voice and not Evan's. You'll hear his in just a minute. Due to copyright issues, we are unable to podcast the audio that we use during the broadcast of the live show. So in this version, you'll hear the discussion, of course, but you won't hear the performance, the music from Joni Mitchell from Sunday's Newport Folk Festival performance. If you do want to catch that, you can go to our website, wxxinews.org/connections, click on this episode, and there's a link at the bottom of the page that will take you to the clips. But for copyright purposes, we're removing it in this podcast, and now you'll hear Evan introduce our guests.
Connie Deming is a singer-songwriter and a big Joni fan. I'm a big Connie fan, so welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Evan. Great to be here.
It's a beautiful moment to have you here. Scott Regan is the longtime host on WRUR's Open Tunings. Always a pleasure to have you, sir.
Thank you, Evan. Good to be here.
Jeff Spivak, arts and life editor for WXXI News, who has a knack for putting things much more eloquently than I could ever imagine. And even when you're off the cuff, I don't know how you do it. Welcome back to the program.
I don't put the pressure on.
Okay? No pressure, Jeff Spivak. It's great to have him back. Paul Maggio is a big Joni Mitchell fan who has seen her perform live, Paul, 10 times?
Yes, that's correct. 10 times.
10 times. But what would you have given to be at Newport this weekend?
I would have stopped the world myself to have been there.
Did anybody know this was coming, by the way? Was this this was really well kept under wraps here. What did you think, Paul, when you heard about it?
Well, my phone exploded that day. So many friends contacting me, and I just felt like what I wanted to do is if I could somehow get in a car and drive up to Newport, I would have done that. But I found out just as she was going on, even though there was a rumor circulating in that Joni Mitchell discussion list community that this was probably going to happen, but it wasn't for sure. But it happened and the world stopped.
My advice now that your phone has exploded is to not have it repaired. It's not making your life better. Stick to music. I'm not surprised to hear that there was that much buzz about this. And I wonder, Connie Deming, what was your reaction to hearing about it, seeing it happen?
Well, the first I heard about it was I got a text from you, Paul. Look at this!
Your phone exploded. So,
no, just you. And then the next morning, I saw all these videos of the clips of her songs on her set that she did with everybody on the stage there. And my absolute favorite was Summertime that you started the show with. That was blew me away. I loved hearing her because I thought, wow, she can still sing. Her voice has dropped 2 octaves, but she can still do what she it sounded like Nina Simone or something.
Yeah.
And then my second was when I saw a picture online of her standing playing her guitar. Mm-hmm. And I went, when did she get her fingers back on the guitar? And I heard it was 7 months ago. She started to practice. She would watch her own YouTube videos and put her fingers in the same places that she used to.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. Isn't that amazing? And Connie, when you're watching her guitar performance, is part of it amazement that she could do it at all? I mean, you're not all that technically discerning, although she sounded great.
She sounded fantastic.
But it was an amazing moment at all to knowing what she's been through, right?
Oh, yes. And I know a little piece of this because my brain decided to go into a dark room a few years back and I didn't know what was wrong. Suddenly, I could not pick the guitar strings, which I used to be able to do without thinking. I could just hear something and pick it. I didn't have a lot of guitar prowess in other areas like bar chords and all that, but I could pick without thinking and clearly and easily. And suddenly that's gone away. And only since April I've been trying to get it back because physical therapy did not help me. And I discovered a book that a woman in Spain wrote who's curing people with dystonia, focal dystonia. And it's fascinating. You target the deep, dark place in your brain where the nervous system had at some point tried to protect you by going into survival mode. And that's not good. And the doctors don't know about it. They don't study it. So it sounds airy-fairy to them. And I was dying to call up Joni Mitchell's physical therapist and ask him if he knew about this technique.
So how are you doing?
I feel like I've gotten 45% of my guitar picking back since April.
Incredible.
It was at zero. So I'm hoping.
Does that mean, Connie, that if we sat here with a guitar with you, that you could do some picking? You could do some? No?
It would be very sloppy. My fingers would not cleanly hit the notes. They're going, but at least it's better than what I had.
On its way. It's coming.
Coming.
Amazing.
And the reason is that I was told is that not by the doctors. They say there's nothing you can do. I tried them all around here. The expert on dystonia I tried. But this woman in Spain who's written this book, who's been working with people like me for 30 years, including Victor Wooten, the bass player, people like this, she says the reason you can get it back is because the brain has neuroplasticity. So there. Yeah.
Brains are amazing, aren't they?
Yeah.
This is producer Megan Mack again, just jumping in to let you know that in this next part of the show, we played a clip from Joni Mitchell's performance over the weekend where she did an electric guitar solo of Just Like This Train. Our guests listened to that, and then they talked about it. Here are their reactions.
That's when I grabbed that and I slapped it on my Facebook page and said, my hero. And nobody knows much until now why I said that, but she got up. Guitar playing back.
amazing achievement.
Well, she taught herself to walk when she had polio at 9 years old, willed herself to walk. What's she got that we don't have?
Very strong will, determination. What a great scene there. Place goes nuts, by the way, at the end of that song. Brandy said that was her favorite moment. It was just really, really cool stuff.
Absolutely.
In a moment, by the way, I've got somebody on the phone who was there. We're going to talk about that in a moment.
Oh, cool.
Jeff, you were not there.
No.
But I am curious to know how it hit you when you first saw some of those scenes.
Yeah, well, like Connie, I have this deep, dark place in my brain, but people like Joni Mitchell pull me out of that. And I'm not ashamed to admit that when I started watching that thing, I cried a little bit. It was really something.
It was very deep. We're all going to cry when we listen to a full song coming up here.
Yeah, and it's not just thinking about beautiful music. You know, I hear beautiful music all the time, but it's the circumstances around what I'm listening to and looking at that really get to me. And the circumstances here, you know, are just, you can't get over it. It's just amazing to see this happen. I know that it's not a miracle, but the strength that it takes to pull yourself together. And she's 78 now. She could just walk away and say, I did enough. But she didn't. She wants to keep going. She wants to have that music always be a part of her life. And she pulled it back together. She's back there. She's back.
Jeff, when you say that her music helps in some ways you pull you out of the dark places in your own brain, Is that created by the circumstances of the world that we're in, or something else?
Oh, geez, it could be like, you know, I've got to shovel the driveway in winter. So it could be anything, you know. But yeah, it's you know, these are dark times. Come on, you know. But I turn to music to distract me, and Joni Mitchell is also, she's a distraction, but she's also reality. I appreciate the fact that she's been through so many things. As Connie mentioned, polio as a 9-year-old. I mean, you're a 9-year-old kid. You got polio. How do you know how to handle that? Yep. She's strong.
Oh yeah,
amazing woman. Amazing stuff. Scott Regan, one of the ways that Brandi Carlile put it was that she wants us all to remember and to continue to lift up the way pavers, the people who have come before and done the work, and we should not just consider them as part of the past. That this was Joni Mitchell saying, yes, as to Jeff's point, that she could have said, I've done enough and I've been through enough. And Brandi said, our past is still part of our present, and we can come together and put all of that stuff together. And I wonder how it hit you on stage, seeing the multiple generations playing together. You're someone who loves to be on stage with other people, and the harmonies that were there and the music together. What did you make of it?
Well, the younger generations who were on the stage were inspired. They were awestruck. I think they were pretty much surprised by what was happening, the same way we were, to see her up there singing and playing guitar. And she's just passing it on in so many ways that you can see the vessel using Brandi Carlile. Sort of, she's taken it on her shoulders to sort of really introduce her to the next generations and carry on the traditions that Joni Mitchell has really helped create. So,
and I was watching that thinking of just thinking about how much they kept it under wraps, but I was also wondering, did you rehearse at all? I mean, there was a lot of people coming together on stage there, right? And Scott, you've been on stage many times with many different sized groups there. Whatever they did to get that thing together with Joni, that was pretty tight, wasn't it?
You know, there's been a lot of group events, like the If All Rochester Wrote the Same Song, where, you know, everyone shows up with a different song, and there's a core band, and you can sort of run through things one at a time. I heard something about practices. I heard someone saying it went pretty well in practice. It did this in practice. So they did have a couple of practices, and, you know, the songs are fairly well known, most of them, although, you know, her version of Summertime was just incredible. I have to say, I agree with Connie on that. That blew me away. You know, you talk about being put in a different place and just escaping from the world. That was the song that did it for me. I just, when you were talking about that and talk about the escape of music, when you mentioned Summertime, I can remember the world shut out for me when I was listening to her sing that. Her later voice, I just love her later voice. But anyway, yeah, I'm sure they practice. And then you could see, I mean, the way it was orchestrated, it was just a celebration of her music.
Yeah,
and they really took it to that point.
Producer Megan Mack sends me a note saying that Joni Mitchell has said that she was a little nervous in rehearsal, so there was some rehearsal time, of course. And it's, to Scott's point, when you're that good, you may not need much, but even Joni Mitchell said she was a little nervous. And you can understand it. This is a big, big public deal. It hasn't been about 20 years since a full show. And someone who was there was Patty, who's on the phone from Rochester. How did that happen, Patty?
Well, I attend the Newport Folk Festival. I've been going since 2011. And it's an annual event in my family. My son, Ryan Yarmel, who started this tradition many, many years ago, and this year was the best ever. So, what do you want to know about Joni Mitchell?
When you're there, was there like a buzz in the crowd, like, you know what's supposedly coming? Were you all ready for it? Did anybody not know it was coming? What was that like?
So, it was advertised as, so we always know the last show, the closing event starts about 5 o'clock, and you always know that it's going to be full of surprises, but you don't know what. Now, when Brandi Carlile's involved, you know it's going to be amazing because she is just Brandi Carlile. And she got up and started the set. Well, first of all, there was a rumor started early in the morning that it was going to be Joni Mitchell. And but you hear a lot of rumors, but that one seemed to stick. And so everyone kind of that might be the person. And so Brandi started the set, and she did a very short set, and she ended it with, she said, "You guys can see my set anytime, but I have something very special planned. Give us 10, 15 minutes. We have to set up," at which point all the crew came on and set up the area so that it was like a living room with a chair and people sitting on couches. So it actually mimicked the kind of scene that Joni Mitchell would have hosted in her house. And so when Joni Mitchell came out, I mean, the crowd was just insanely wild. And what was so cool about it was the Newport Folk Festival is very intergenerational. So it's really interesting. I mean, as I say, I've been going for many years, and it was our son that got us going. And so you see all these different kinds of different age of people, but all the young people as well as the older people, which I put myself in that generation, knew all the words to the song.
That's
Everybody
great.
Was singing along. And the last song was the Circle Game, Escape. And when everyone in the audience was singing along, it was, I kind of tell you, it was magical, transporting, inspirational, just truly a high point in any concert I've ever seen.
How did she sound in person? I mean, in the videos, we're all talking about how great she sounded. And as producer Megan Mack points out, she said in an interview afterwards that she was feeling the love. She'd been nervous in rehearsals, but she actually thought she wasn't too bad. How was she?
She was great. And I think that you never knew. I mean, everyone knew her health challenges. And when she came out on stage, like, it was a big gamble. You don't know how something like that was going to go. And I just so admire Brandi Carlile for being willing to, you know, take that leap. And when Joni Mitchell took up the guitar, Brandi said, "Now this is really a faith leap, you know, for Joni to come up there and do that." And it was incredible. But if you felt anything, I mean, she sounded great. You just felt the love in the audience. Like it was, she was crying the whole set. It was just beautiful and inspirational with the power of music. I teach music. I run a program for children in our city that don't have access. And I am so inspired by the power of music to just transform an audience of 10,000 people all singing and holding on and staying to the very last minute.
Patty, last question for you. You know,
yes.
I was struck in a moment when we go to our only break, we're gonna listen to all of both sides now because we want everybody to be crying and we're gonna cry together.
Mm-hmm.
But I was struck watching the videos that that there was like a sense that said the audience knew, just to your point, and everybody on stage knew what Joni has been through. They knew it was a leap of faith, and they knew it was a bit of a gamble, and I think you correctly put it. And there was this sense that was like, you know what, you're going to be great, Joni, but we've got you. Like, we're here with you too. And you're going to sound like you sound. Your voice has changed. Maybe it's an octave or two lower, but we've got you. We love you, and you know, just the fact that you're here, we're all going to lift each other up. That was what it sort of felt watching it. I wonder if it felt that way too.
I think you really well said. I think that it was one giant safety net that it didn't really matter how she was going to sound. It was just that we were all together supporting this legend. And it was, as I said, you could just feel that energy, that love, that compassion all around you from young and old. And yes, it that's what it felt like to be in the audience. And it was beautiful. It was a beautiful moment. It was really a high point. And I think afterward, meeting people as we were leaving the concert, people were just kind of walking on air. Just, I can't believe that we just saw this legend here. And the power of music to bring her forward and to continue to inspire not only everyone in the audience, but young people, and to believe in the power of music to rise above challenges and to give strength. So, yeah, it was pretty incredible. I am so grateful that I was there.
Hey, Patty, thank you for sharing that. Thanks for the work you're doing in our community. That's also beautiful stuff, and we really appreciate you.
Thank you so much.
What an awesome phone call. If you're just joining us, you're like, what are we talking about? By now, I hope that you've seen that Joni Mitchell, at the age of 78, came out and performed at Newport this weekend. Her first performance there was more than 50 years ago, and here she is now, at the age of 78, had an aneurysm in 2015, has been through so much medically, just being able to sort of move and walk and talk and let alone sing and play guitar. And she was out there. She did it. She played a full set list. I mean, the list is awesome. She played a lot of great stuff and had a lot of help from fellow musicians and Brandi Carlile and so many others on stage who love her and was thrilled to support her. And when we come back from our only break, there's a lot more to share with you. We've got more clips, and our guests have a lot of recollections. In fact, I know some of them. I mentioned Paul's seen Joni 10 times, and not all in sort of the same kind of venue. So we're going to talk about that as well. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, we're joined by Congressman Joe Morelli, discussing a range of issues with him, including Roe v. Wade, gun laws, the SCOTUS decision on the EPA, funding arms for Ukraine, many more issues at the top of the congressional agenda. Congressman Joe Morelli, Wednesday. As we celebrate the performance of Joni Mitchell at Newport this past week and the surprise appearance of the 78-year-old Joni Mitchell, who has not really played a public set in 20 years, and has been dealing with all kinds of health issues for a long, long time. In fact, she wrote in her book that she's been sick her whole life. And she has pushed back against some of the medical community's skepticism of the disease that she has been living with. She says that there are times that it's better, and there are times where it feels like her body is being attacked, and all of the energy and the way she wrote it, it's not a hallucination. It's as if you're being bitten by fleas and lice, attacking your nervous system, eating me alive, sucking the juices out. The blunt description of Joni Mitchell on her own words and her own book about what she's been living with. So to see her on stage, singing, performing, bringing the house down, playing guitar, and really bringing it back to so many classics there, was amazing. It was emotional. It was powerful. And we're talking about the power of music to do just that with our guests here. And boy, Connie, that was for you, by the way. We brought Summertime back for you. That sultriness in her voice there. There's a real depth to it still there, isn't there?
It's just deep and rich and full. And it's got all the wisdom and all the pain and all the beauty all wrapped up in there. And that piano player, how lovely these musicians behind her was. The wind and the sun and all the good stuff.
It was a setting like you couldn't believe. Brandi Carlile opened that day exhorting the crowd before they knew officially that Joni was coming. Brandi told the crowd to believe in the power of music to make the world better. And I don't know, Jeff Spivak, I don't know, I don't mean to sound sort of flippant here, but let me just sort of make an observation. We live in a world where the worst people have the power to do a lot of damage and to hurt a lot of people. And we live in a world that eventually may break because of it. And yet most people want the same things. They want kindness. They want to be good and good parents and good people and good family members. And they like simple things. And And there's something beautiful about that. And I'm not sitting here naively thinking, well, if I could just get Vladimir Putin to go to Newport, you know, the whole thing would change. But it's amazing to me that single human beings have the power to do such damage when so many people, I think, feel so moved spiritually by what we just heard and would never seek to harm anyone. And I can't juxtapose it. I have a hard time, Jeff, reconciling in my own brain kind of the multitudes of humanity. But that's the good stuff we just heard.
You're not being flippant. You look at the power of music and what it does for people, and you think about all the – there are many blind musicians out there. There are Brian Wilson, Beach Boys, has a hearing impairment. He doesn't hear things the way you and I would. Rosemary Clooney was bipolar. Isaac Perlman, like Joni, had polio. Django Reinhardt burned two fingers on his hand. He couldn't really use them. He invented a new way to play a guitar, and now other people are doing that. Not burning their fingers, but playing in his style.
I hope so.
Or you have, like, there was a writer, Christy Brown, wrote a book called My Left Foot, and Daniel Day-Lewis played him in the movie. And it was about, he had cerebral palsy, and he learned how to paint and to type by using just his left foot. And that's really overcoming an issues that none of us could ever dream to overcome. I mean, how do you start there? So music and arts pushes us to try to do things that maybe we would just walk away from. And that's what I hear in Joni Mitchell now, is all the things that she has faced over the years. And it's been a lot. You know, like she said, she's been in pain a lot. She's, you know, gave up a daughter for adoption. And when you hear Joni Mitchell at first, you hear this beautiful voice, you know, as a young woman, and then it takes on darker colors. And some people say it's because she's a smoker, but she never said that. But, you know, and now you hear what she's doing now, and I hear a real fragility at points in what she was doing at Newport. And that comes from living a life. And all these artists, all these people who had to overcome difficult situations, I don't wish bad things on anybody, but you wonder, boy, maybe facing difficult times and difficult personal situations, is it builds on your art, and at the same time, hand in hand, your art leads you past them.
And, you know, Jeff, the point that you make about the way her voice sounded this weekend, that there is a fragility, there's a beauty, but it's very different than, say, a voice like James Taylor, who may not ever miss a note. You know, he was at CMAC this summer, and, I mean, one of my favorites, but so pure. Joni's voice now, she's not going to sing without missing a note. And there's almost something, not that a guy like Taylor's inauthentic, but there's something that is rich and authentic and vulnerable, I think, about a voice like that now.
I love vulnerability and fragility in art. You know, without either, we wouldn't have flowers. So it's just a... Oh, Connie, come on.
I told you Jeff would do it. Every time Spivak's on the show, he says something, I'm like, oh, I got to write that down.
but I mean it, though. Fragility is something we all can relate to, because it's something we hide.
Yeah, absolutely. What a great way to describe it. And when you think about her performances over the years, Paul, you've seen her 10 times, but a lot of the world hasn't seen her in 20-plus years now. Can you describe some of the different venues and what that's been like in different settings with her, Paul?
Sure. I've seen her in big stadiums like Madison Square Garden and the Rochester War Memorial and the Syracuse War Memorial and Saratoga Performing Arts. But I think probably the most, and I'll try to tell this in a very Spivak succinct way, the venue that I have the fondest recollection of seeing her at was at the Fez Cafe, which is in the basement of the Time Cafe restaurant, which is no longer in existence, and it was in New York City. The year was 1995, I think. And I was listening to the radio in the morning, which I still do today because I listen to Open Tunings followed by Connections. And I heard that there was...
Flattery gets you everywhere, man.
Yeah, okay. And I heard that there was going to be a special birthday concert for her. And it was going to be a private birthday party. But somehow I just had this calling and I felt that I had to be there. So I rushed over to the club, which is about 20 blocks from my apartment. And it's a club I've been to quite a few times. It's one of the venues that Colorblind James Experience played at when he came to New York City to play. And it was lunchtime. And the concert was going to happen around 8 o'clock, and the restaurant was busy, and none of the staff knew what was going on. And there were three other people waiting, and two of them were a couple, and we instantly formed a bond. And we tried to figure out a way how we could get into this concert, even though we weren't invited. So we sat down to have lunch and tried to come up with a plan. And we were there for about 20 minutes, and then Joni walked into the restaurant, and she was with her art director friend, Robbie Cavallina, I think. And so we all stood up and we approached her and we told her we were huge fans and we were hoping that there would be a way that we could get into this concert. And she was very sweet and down to earth. And so there's a long guest list and the space was small, but she would try to see what she could do. And then she left and apologized and went down to the Fez to set up. And then a few minutes later, Robbie came back upstairs and walked over to our table and said, Joni feels really bad that we won't be able to get into the show, and she's wondering if you'd like to come in and hear her sound check. So we jumped at the chance, and awesome. So we were escorted down to the Fez by Robbie, and we sat down, and Joni came out with the drummer Brian Blade, and the two of them proceeded to play four full songs, and there were just the four of us sitting there, and we were totally captivated. It was like what Patty was describing earlier. We just were pinching ourselves. We just couldn't believe that she was there playing just to us. And I remember thinking when she finished Amelia, I felt like I had left my body and that I was flying. So after she finished, she came over and she asked us, well, how did it sound? And so I was completely tongue-tied, which is something that's very strange for me because I'm usually like never at a loss for what to say. And so, I mean, what do you say to one of your idols? You know, all I could really get out was, oh, you sounded great. And, you know, she thanked us for coming, and then we left, and all four of us left, and we just could not believe what we had experienced. That it was just the four of us, and it was like a private audience. So we were committed to trying to come back to see the full concert. And so we stayed at the Fez, and when the bouncer arrived, we tried to ingratiate ourselves to him, but of course he'd have none of it. So we formed a line by the door and told him, if there are any cancellations, we'll be the first online. And he kept saying, it's a private party, you can't get in, go home. But we persevered. We totally persevered. And then as the concert was starting and people were arriving, like Chrissy Hynde and Carly Simon, there's just so much excitement in the club. And so just as we were thinking we would never get in, the bouncer walks over to you and said, I can't believe I'm saying this, but the four of you can go in. But just go in and get a seat and sit down immediately and don't say a word. And so we ran in and she was playing at the time. The first song she was playing was, I think, Refuge for the Roads. And I noticed, all we could do was stand by the bar. And so I turned around, and I was standing next to Carly Simon. And so I'm thinking, this is interesting. So she finished playing the song, and Carly Simon turns to me and says, she sounds great, doesn't she? she sounds fabulous, you know. And then she sang a couple more songs, and then they brought out a birthday cake, and we all sang happy birthday to her. And I just could not believe I'm here with a small group of friends singing happy birthday to Joni Mitchell. I thank my lucky stars, and it was one of the most magical nights ever I have had here living in New York City. And living in New York City, there's many magical nights. But this was one. I have seen her 10 times, but that time was just so
Yeah, it's different.
Powerful and special.
What a great story, Paul. That's awesome stuff. We're talking about Joni Mitchell playing at Newport this past weekend. Jan says, hey, for Connie Deming, it is so good to hear you. You played and sang Wind Beneath My Wings at my mom and dad's 50th wedding anniversary in 96, and I've had the honor of singing with you and was going to call you for some lessons. I'm also trying to recover my voice after a second open heart valve replacement. Tell us again the name of the book you mentioned and love you. That is from Jan.
The book I mentioned?
The book from Spain.
That book.
Yes, that book.
It is called The Focal Dystonia Cure.
The Focal Dystonia Cure.
By Ruth Childs, C-H-I-L-E-S.
And Colleen says, whoa, just got in the car to head out. Usually listen to you when I'm in the car. And all of a sudden it's Connie, Scott, Joni. Connie, you know I'm her second biggest local female Joni fan. So glad to be listening to this. That's from Colleen. Yeah, you're the biggest. That's fine.
Okay, well.
And I dragged Emery Stein in here because our production assistant is officially the youngest person on this panel now. So, Scott Regan, when you are doing the work you're doing, we all want to have the youngest audience possible. That is no – we want a full audience of diversity. We want all ages, right? But in broadcasting, it's harder to get younger and younger listeners because younger people have all these different places they can find music and experiences and digital content. So when you see, Scott, that there were, as Patty said in her phone call, young people in the crowd at Newport and they knew the music and they're singing with it, does that give you hope the way it gives me hope? I love that stuff.
Is that a question?
I want to know how you see...
How I see younger people.
Whether we can get young people connected in the same way.
Well, you know, I can only... speak basically about my own kids. And I grew up, I made my kids believe the Beatles were kids' music. So they grew up on the Beatles. And now they love the band and they love the Avett Brothers and they love My Morning Jacket. And they've continued to build on good music. You know, I mean, because really there is good music out there. And if you listen to good music, you'll keep finding more good music that's newer and newer and newer. And you might be able to speak to that better than I can.
Well, MRA, you are a Joni fan.
Major, major Joni fan.
I love that.
Yeah, I mean.
How did you get into Joni?
You know, great question. I mean, both my parents.
Hold on, MRA. I'm going to make you get right on your microphone so we can hear
okay,
you.
Okay, yeah. Just like... yeah, no worries. All right, perfect. Yeah, I mean, both of my parents are musicians. I grew up listening to a lot of Joni as a kid. I was fascinated with Ladies of the Canyon. The mythical storytelling, everything, it spoke to me. And then I, you know, sort of dove out of my Joni moments, 12, 13, 14, and then came back as a young adult in my early 20s, and I thought, everything she's saying, it speaks to me, everything. And the heartbreak in her lyricism, the sense of euphoria in songs like Free Man in Paris, it makes your heart sing. And I know for my best friends and I, all huge Joni fans, and we'll even go up to people who don't know about Joni, we'll say, oh, you know, we'll talk about Joni Mitchell, and they'll say, you haven't really listened to her much. We're like, you haven't listened to Joni Mitchell? That's crazy, because they'll have heard, you know, Graham Nash, all these other folks, and it's like, where's the Joni love, especially among younger male musicians. It's so important that her legacy lives on because she was working at a time where she was one of the few female voices among her contemporaries, and she deserves all the respect that she's still getting, and she deserves even more.
Was it pretty cool for you to see this weekend?
So cool. I mean, I've always been, I think about Joni. You know, I think about her in my spare time. I hope she's doing okay. I really do. I'll think to myself, you know, because I've worried about her health and things like that, and I wonder where she is and wonder what she's doing. And she's also a fantastic visual artist, too. She does phenomenal illustrations. And I would think to myself, oh, maybe she's doing that right now. It's kind of a strange thing to have a parasocial relationship with Joni Mitchell. But when she came on stage, I cried a little bit watching those videos because it made me so happy to know that she's okay.
Yeah. Seeing it, yeah, that's actually a really beautiful way to put that. Thanks for letting us drag you in here.
Oh, of course. Glad to be dragged in.
So, Scott Regan, there you go. There's the testimony of a young 20-something who loves Joni in as authentic a way as possible. I mean, you could tell That's not just someone who knows paid paradise and put up a parking lot. You know,
one thing we haven't mentioned is the power of the song. We listen to both sides now, and you talk about timelessness in a song. I remember when I first heard that in Circle Game, I'm thinking, yeah, it's so obvious. You know, it's like an obvious song. It's almost too simple, but it's just beautiful and deep and meaningful. And the power of the song is, and then hearing her sing it in her later voice is really stunning.
Yeah.
Awesome stuff. And boy, the emails just flowed. I mean, people are appreciating this so much. Mary says, when I hear Joni Mitchell's voice and hear the description about fragility and vulnerability, I hear a deep well of strength. This beautiful voice, more deep than ever and honed by the years of experience. What about strength, depth, resilience? I actually think, Jeff Spivak, that's kind of what you were saying by the fragility and the vulnerability, because that strength is absolutely at the core of that.
One quality shows off the other. Yeah, she's tough because, you know, I don't know if you guys were at the show at the Memorial, you know, the War Memorial, like 20 years ago. Yeah, you were, Scott. I don't know about you.
And
Dave Alvin opened, and then Joni, and then Dylan. And, of course, the Dylan crowd's making a lot of noise because, you know, they can't wait. Uh-huh. And Joni's up there smoking a cigarette. You know, none of us are allowed to smoke in the arena, but she is. So she's up there smoking a cigarette, and she just, like, shushes the crowd. You know? It's like, you know, we respect her, so we shut up.
Megan Mack here again to close out the show. We ended the live broadcast with Joni Mitchell's performance of The Circle Game. Since we can't use that here, I'll close things out for Evan and thank all of our guests. Thank you to Connie Deming, Paul Maggio, Scott Regan, Jeff Spivak, and Emma Ray Stein, and all of our team at Connections. Rob Braden, our engineer, Emma Ray Stein, also a guest on the show. She's our production assistant. Big team effort today. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Connections.